Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 26th. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and joining us, horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Always a fun show and a popular one. So call early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And you can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. We talk gardening today with Bob, Greg, and Fred, and you comes up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show for today, and I'm told it's the last one for the calendar year. Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York is here. Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Yep, this is the dream team. And your chance to ask your question is right now. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email us if you so desire. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number here is 800-348-2551. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here.
Yep. Great to be back. Yep.
Feels like autumn today.
Feels like autumn today.
It definitely does.
Took a while.
Notwithstanding today, though, it's still very dry out there.
Yes.
It varies from place to place, but we've really had very little rain in the last, 2 months?
Probably 2 months now, yeah. It's been really dry. And even that rain that we got recently, it didn't
earlier
penetrate
in a week,
too
yeah.
far down.
I think in Albany, we got 3/4 of an inch, but it came down in a half an hour.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
a lot of that ran off.
Anything.
It didn't penetrate in.
We've been reminding people regularly, anything that you've planted in the last year, even things you put in last year, in 2016,
even the last few years,
a good soaking. We only have a couple of weeks left before it gets nice and chilly, and you'll have to turn the tap off on the outside. So getting those things nice and wet today or this week sometime, and maybe again next week would be
looks
advisable.
Like maybe over the weekend, Sunday, Monday, we might get a rain. But this is dangerous for plants because stresses are cumulative. You know, if you get a dry period in the fall and then you have a tough winter and then the spring isn't too great, things get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and most of these trees and woody plants, they're really storing for the upcoming
for
spring
next
and next year. And a lot of people think, well, I don't need to do
it's
much
over
with
now.
It.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's
we get this
over.
A lot, but it really does add to a lot of stress of plants if you don't get that late summer or fall watering. So once a week, thorough saturation, August right on through, and even this weekend and even next week.
And that said, not to discourage too many people, it's still you can be transplanting, you can
absolutely.
Be planting some things. It's not as fun. They're not going to bloom in 2 minutes. You know, you have to wait till next year. But rearranging the gardens, a great opportunity. All those fall bulbs or spring bulbs, whatever you call them, daffodils,
I mean, for deciduous materials, things that lose their leaves, this is an ideal time of year to transplant.
It is.
We've been waiting for this.
Yeah, the leaves need to drop first. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia are here to answer your questions on the gardening edition of Vox Pop. Last one for 2017. Are we going to do one in early 2018?
You're supposed to tell us.
Yeah, I was talking.
As you well know, Bob, I never know until about 12 hours before what the show is.
I was talking to our producer there, and he said sounded like January.
Oh, okay. Fantastic, because that's always a fun show to do.
That's a good one.
It is, and there's a lot of things. You know, people think, what are you doing in January? But
lots.
You know what?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot. That's a great pruning time. That's prime time dormant pruning.
It's also nice for the cabin fever to have a little optimism and say, well, you know, the gardeners are still
exactly.
here. Chances are there'll be a garden.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It primes them up for the spring.
All right, let's go back to the phones or go to them for the first time. Tom and Latham. Tom, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if I could just hopefully the panelists can help explain the for a brand new gardener, if somebody wanted to start off planting, you know, growing vegetables like tomatoes and potatoes, that kind of thing. When is the best time to get started? I guess you can get started planting tomatoes in the winter inside. And what's the timetable for getting started in the gardening process for next year?
My first question is, where do you intend to grow them outside this coming spring, in containers or in the ground?
That's also another good question. I live in an apartment complex, And I don't know anything about the quality of the soil, but I noticed that there were a couple of other tenants that had grown small gardens. Outside in the ground, outside of the apartment on the on the lawn.
So if you intend to
of our apartments.
If you intend to plant them in the ground, this is a great time to get that ground ready.
Yeah, do your soil prep, get a pH test, mix in some organic matter. You're not going to do anything about growing anything right now, but you're going to get the soil ready to grow.
That's right. And there's two sort of schools of thought with gardening. One of them is sort of the no-till method, and the other one is the till method. And as the years have gone on and the research has been put out there, I've been gravitating more and more and more and advocating more and more and more for the no-till method.
Which, why?
Well, the biggest thing is it's less work and you get better results if you do it correctly. And, you know, long story short, the way that you would do this is a lot of times when you till, you disrupt an entire ecosystem of soil organisms every time you till. And the more you learn about soil, the actually less fine tilling makes sense. So it makes more and more sense to sort of leave the plumbing and the ventilation system, if you want to think of it that way, in place in that soil, which is there, and all the microbial activity, which so many people just overlook. Yeah. There's fungi that really, really make a huge difference with soil health and plant growth, and beneficial bacteria that make the nutrients available to those plants. So when you do a no-till method, you're leaving the biota of that soil alone.
So to initiate the garden, though, how would you recommend?
I would recommend, well, as Bob said, soil test always a great place to start. You don't know what you have until you actually get it tested. So get it tested, and you can actually take it a step further than just pH. You could actually have a fertility test done. And in New York, the local cooperative extension can send that out to Cornell University, and they'll actually give you back results of the fertility. And you tell them what you want to grow, they'll tell you. So the next step would be smothering that ground.
Yeah, black plastic or newspapers or something to kill what's there.
You could use either of those. Also, sometimes I recommend like the heavy-duty weed fabric because not that you're going to leave it there, but because it breathes. It lets water get back into the soil. It keeps the microbials kind of happy.
And I would just suggest
take it off in the spring.
The other option, only because I'm sort of assuming since it's an apartment complex, he's maybe going to make a very small bed to start.
You're gonna need
would
to
be to just peel up the sod. And for the first time, this time around, actually break up that ground a little bit, loosen it up, add some compost from your local garden center if you have it, and then you could cover that up with a little plastic if you want so nothing sprouts, and wait till spring before you plant.
Now, he had a question, too, about when to start things, and that's a mistake new gardeners often make is don't start things too early. You're not going to start tomatoes in January if you're going to plant
them out. What about those – I used to see the ads on TV, the apartment tomatoes that hang upside down.
But you still got to get them outside to get enough light. There isn't enough light until March or April.
If you're going to start your own tomato from seed, my recommendation is not before April 1st.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Diana in Northampton. Diana, you're on.
Hi there. I have some older azalea bushes. They don't get a lot of sunshine. They're in pretty poor soil, and they've gotten pretty leggy. I'm not sure when to trim them and how much to trim back.
You know, typically when you prune azaleas, the time to do it is right after they bloom, and about 25 to 30% of the foliage or branches off in any one session. Usually a quarter of the foliage, not more than a third at any one particular time, and typically you're in good shape. You may also want to think about some fertilizer for them if you're not already doing that. Again, pH testing is always nice if they're, you know, just not doing that great, but they've been there a while. That tells me the pH is able to be tolerated by the plant.
May want to temper your expectations, too. If they're in real shade and in lousy ground, they may not do real well.
Yeah.
So move, this is a good time to move them. If you want to transplant them, we were just mentioning that, you could, you know, gently dig them up, try to contain the root ball, and put them in a slightly brighter location. But as Fred said, pruning them back would be something we'd recommend waiting till late May.
So after they flowered, and then 25%.
That's right.
All righty then. I will I'll do that then. Thank you so much. And so fertilizer, these like a high acid soil, right?
Well, you know, they typically do, but we always like to say test the pH just to know what you got, because you don't know what you have, and then adjusting something before you know what you have can be sort of problematic. But typically they are an acidic-loving plant, so they are going to like it a little bit lower than your classic like 6.5 to 6.8 range where most plants like. These guys are probably going to be down in the 5.5. But your local cooperative extension can test that for you. You'll know where you're at. You can also possibly limb up some of the branches of surrounding trees just a little bit, making good pruning cuts, of course, and that'll let a lot more light in there, too.
All right, Diana, thanks a lot. Let's quickly go over to Joanne before our first break. Joanne in Catskill, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Hmm. 15 years ago, when we moved to the property, we planted burning bush, we planted Rose of Sharon, we planted some other things that make little cranberry-looking things on them, and another bush that I can't think of the name, and in 15 years, they've all kind of grown into each other now. It's like one big maze of a burning bush coming out and a rose bush coming out next to it. Is it too late to, like, really trim back and make some room for them? Have air in between, so
we were suggesting that if you're going to do a lot of severe pruning, that you wait until spring, until after the bloom of most of these things. However, doing it before the bloom, if you don't mind giving up some of the bloom on those spring blooming things, the Rose of Sharon will bloom later anyway, and the burning bush doesn't bloom to speak of really anyway. So pruning in March, April to open them all up would be a good time.
Yeah, but not now.
That isn't.
Yep, you're not doing it now.
Right. It's a little. It's it's better to wait until we get in. You know, through winter, the plants are completely dormant. They're coming out of winter. Any severe pruning right now tends to stress the plants.
All right, because one of them is also the yellow forsythia, and that blooms pretty early. So
that gets
until after the bloom, right?
After the bloom for forsythia, before the bloom for Rose of Sharon. Burning bush.
Doesn't matter.
All right, Joanne, we got to take a break here. It's the gardening show on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the number. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves are with us, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarriers and fabricators used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Open 7 days with authentic Mexican lunch, U-Fruit, Petting Zoo, Fresh Farm Market, Cider Donuts, and Bakery. New Love Apple Art Space, 518-828-5048. Waterwheel Village, Galloway, New York. Specializing in extra sharp New York cheddar since 1923. Offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. Waterwheelvillage.com. From Colby Attorneys Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing. For the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. And from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, the last gardening show of 2017. We have Fred Breglia and Greg Ward and Bob Graves with us. And Fred, what's going on over at the Landis Arboretum?
We're actually getting ready for our annual wine tasting event. We're winding down all the events of the year. We had a great season, and usually the last event of the year for us is the wine tasting event.
Did you say winding down?
Hey, we are winding down, and there is literally no better way than to come to the Landis Arboretum's wine tasting event to be held November 10th. It's the day before Veterans Day, and we are doing discounts for any vets, so you know, definitely show up. And the event is going to be November 10th, Friday, 5:30 to 7:30. It's a sort of a mix of hors d'oeuvres. We have a number, a blend of different wines. We'll give the audience a time to sort of... if they've been trying to get me or the president of the board, we're both going to be there. We'll
be mingling.
We'll be mingling, but we'll also be opening up the panel for any questions on the spot. So if someone has, you know, any questions on what Landis is doing, where we're going in the future, where we've been,
that's cool.
Come to the event, have some wine, have some hors d'oeuvres, and we can run, but we cannot hide. We will be there.
Well, you could always climb a tree, right?
That's true, but I don't know if they're high enough for these folks.
So, but people may be getting a little high. I mean, that's
You know, it's a festive time of year. I'll put it that way.
Hey, how do people find out more about the Landis Arboretum?
LandisArboretum.org is our website. It's our best marketing tool, and it's a one-stop shop to find out everything Landis.
Well, right. And Greg Ward, anything happening over at Ward's Nursery?
Well, a few things, people might be interested in. We do have a terrarium clinic. Next Saturday, how to build a terrarium, kind of something that people are often interested in the fall. We also, a couple weeks later, on the 18th, have it's already going to be close to Thanksgiving. So we have Thanksgiving centerpiece construction class. I do want to say that Kooky Spooky is still open, that the not too scary Halloween experience at Ward's Nursery. And enough said there.
Oh, cool.
And then, Santa, I know it's a little early, but he will be arriving around
Coming?
24th of November. And these are things that people ask all the time. So
that's great. And how do people find out more about that?
Oh, yeah. WardsNursery.com is the website. It's all on there.
You know, I had a terrarium, I think, in fifth or sixth grade.
Yeah.
It was,
wasn't it fun?
Everything died. It was just terrible. That's why I'm in radio today. Hey, there, Bob, what's happening over at the Fatigan's
Nursery? Well, this weekend I'm doing a seminar on fall lawn care, and we have another seminar on putting your garden to bed this Saturday. You can go to our website, fatigans.com. We have a bunch of upcoming seminars and workshops in November and early December also.
And you guys are, of course, gearing up for the, it's not Halloween yet, so you must be ready for Christmas over at the shops.
Pretty close.
All right, a couple of quick emails, and then back to the phones we will go. This one's from Alice. I've cut into several tomatoes this year, usually heirloom varieties, where the seeds have sprouted inside the tomatoes already. At first, I thought they were worms, but some actually have small leaves already. I'm in my 60s. I've always grown and eaten tomatoes, but haven't seen this before. What's going on? Aren't tomato leaves poisonous? And that's from Alice.
You know, the poison part is simple. All parts of a tomato plant are poisonous except for the fruit.
You're kidding me.
Yep, every single part of that. They're in the nightshade family, and all plants in the nightshade family are actually fairly highly toxic. So not only should you not eat the leaves of tomatoes, you actually should wash your hands after handling leaves of tomatoes.
You are
kidding
me.
Picking the suckers off of tomato plants.
I never knew that.
Yeah, but I love that dark kind of stain that happens.
I do too. But you do want to wash that off. It doesn't hurt your hand. It's not going to get absorbed through your skin. But if you have it on your hands and you accidentally put it in your mouth, you're ingesting poison.
Have we ever seen tomatoes sprout inside?
Never.
I haven't seen that.
No. I can only think that these were tomatoes that maybe had been lying around a little while. We had all that heat
September. Related.
But that is very unusual.
That's unusual.
Yes.
All right, this one is from D in Cornwall on Hudson. We live next to a wooded lot that has just been sold to a developer. We want to plant something non-deciduous as a screen. We have a row of green giant arborvitae in another spot in our garden, and they're doing very well. Are there any other evergreens that we could also plant in the new spot that would grow fairly quickly but wouldn't be too tall, maybe 15 to 20 feet?
Well, certainly hemlock would work.
Hemlock would, particularly if it's any amount of shade, they'll get bigger than that, but you could keep them down.
You could keep hemlocks smaller,
There are some other arborvitae that would work.
Yep, there's the occidentalis, the eastern white cedar, which looks similar to that green giant, which would not get too big and work quite nicely.
I like Norway spruce, but they're going to get too large for his spot.
There are some dwarf Colorado spruce that would be possible. That's another, if there's enough sun.
All right. And then a couple of quick questions from Facebook. Joe writes, we put up a new white vinyl fence and would like suggestions for something to plant in front. I have read that ivy is not a good idea because it attracts bugs and algae. Is that correct? Our ideal choice would be evergreen, which has berries and or flowers. Is holly the only choice? And that's from Joe on Facebook.
It's really with, for us anyway, with evergreen holly, it's really about exposure, not getting too much sun. To me, when I see this fence, I don't know why I did that. I pictured it in a very sunny location, so I would be concerned with that. I think he might want to just check with his local garden center landscape contractor to see about what
certainly
would work.
Juniper is an old plant, but it would certainly work if it's that sunny.
Yes.
Spreading junipers.
Yep. You got a lot of options.
Will ivy attract bugs and algae? Is that true?
No.
Shades the fence, if it keeps it wet, it's going to allow algae. But
it's a vinyl fence.
It's not particular.
I saw ornamental grasses myself when you first mentioned the fence. They're not evergreen, but they do last quite a while.
You can leave them over the winter.
Yes.
How about some of the Japanese knotweed? That's always fun.
Don't do it.
Ding, ding, ding. No.
It's a little gardening joke there. Hey, this is from Tiffany. I live in Massachusetts and love freesias. Can they grow up here? What's a freesia?
So a freesia is in the lily family. It has a tubular flower like a lily, sort of iris-like grassy leaves. If anyone knows that plant called Crocosmia, that's our hardy freesia. So Crocosmia is red or orange. You can get them to winter here and perennialize. Freesia don't quite do it. Yeah, they cannot tolerate the cold winters that we have. You can keep them as a potted plant, and they are usually available mid to late winter, Valentine's Day, something like that. And so you can have them as a potted plant.
Very pretty plant.
And fragrant.
But not hardy outside here.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. David in Pittsfield. David, you're on.
Hi. I'm sure this question has been asked and answered once before, but my memory is short.
Me too.
The maple trees in our park and around our street here have some black spots on the leaves. What are the black spots, and how harmful is it to the tree?
It's a fungus, and it's a something that is not harmful to the tree. It typically gets it almost every year in some kind of minor infection type of way. So almost all these maples are going to get a little bit of it. My guess is that it's a Norway maple, and the spot is probably the size of a dime or so.
I'm not sure if it's a Norway or not, but
it's called tar spot.
It's called tar spot because it looks like a spot of tar, very black. In severe cases, it can actually cause the tree to almost start to lose leaves. And this year has been unbelievably bad. In fact, this is probably the worst year I've ever seen for Norway maple tar spot and even fungal diseases of maple in general.
How much rain and when we got it. That's what happened.
Yeah, but the good news is that, no, it won't hurt the tree. If you do absolutely nothing, it'll come back next year. If you want to try to get some of the leaves out of there, you might reduce some of the inoculum that will infect next year's leaves. But if you do nothing at all, you'll be absolutely fine. The trees will be fine.
So once the leaves fall off, rake them up and get them out of there is what I thought I heard you say.
Yeah, that would reduce some of next year's inoculum because the spores will stay on those leaves in the winter. But if you do nothing, even if you rake up every single leaf, you'll get some tar spot next year. And if you do absolutely nothing, you're going to get it next year anyways. You'll get it a little bit more, but it still will never hurt
the tree. And it's weather-related. Depends on the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get it worse when it's wet.
Okay, and the tree is doing great, so it doesn't seem to have a major impact, but it is, if you will, unsightly and draws your attention to it.
Yeah.
So it's a fungus, and
the disease is called tar spot, absolutely no harm to your tree.
Oh, really?
And,
so it's just it's like acne.
It's going to be an aesthetic thing, just like what he said. It can be unsightly.
The reason it's not terribly dangerous is because the tree has done most of its energy production and energy storage by the time those leaves get infected and fall off.
Yep. Okay. It causes premature leaf drop, but it happens when leaves are kind of falling off anyways.
Done anyway.
All right, over to Patrick in Newburgh. Patrick, you're on.
Hey, two quick questions. I have two lilac bushes that are not like your standard lilac that grows up tall, 6, 8, 10, 12 feet and sends out flowers. They're bushes, but they have never bloomed, and they are in full sun. I was wondering what it is that they need. I did look up something, on Google and whatnot, and I think I've identified them. I think perhaps they're some Asian variety or whatever. But they're planted in northwestern Connecticut over in West Cornwall, to be specific. And I was wondering, they always get great foliage, but never any flowers, and they just always look, a little bit, bummed out, not real happy.
Are you ever pruning them? Do you do any pruning at all?
They don't really require it. They don't do anything.
Just making sure you're not. Just making sure you're not cutting them prior to the bloom. So that sounds like they might be purging.
Oh no, there's been no blooms on them for at least 7 years.
Boy, it's always in shade.
And they're not like the regular ones. They're a different variety of bush. So they just grow. They're just kind of like an innocuous shrub that just kind of gets green and it looks a little pale.
If they're getting a lot of sun, probably the only other thing we could recommend and you could do a soil test first would be to just make some general purpose fertilizer application under the plant, around the, in the root zone of the plant. It's already too late this year to make them bloom in the spring. The buds for the flowers have been predetermined this last July, August. So you'll have to wait a whole another year till 2019 before you actually know if it works. And short of that, if it's not exposure and it's not fertility, then you got some bum plants there.
Now, Bob, you said it may be Persian?
There's a Persian lilac.
Yeah, okay.
It's a smaller version of lilac, or one of the dwarf ones.
Yeah, like a dwarf Korean lilac.
They generally bloom very easily. It's not a bloom that has a hard time.
This is not typical because he said the key words. He hasn't pruned them. They don't need it.
Yeah.
And that's true. If it is one of these dwarf varieties that we're thinking, it's not going to need much pruning.
Okay.
And he said full sun, which is the other magic word. So those two things together almost always work. So definitely check your pH. Yeah. Have your pH tested. If it's too acidic, maybe it's just, you know, enough for the plant to live. But I know that lilacs like it a little more on the alkaline side. They say it's sometimes a little wood ash put around your lilacs actually work really well. But a lot of wood ash does a lot of damage real fast because it has a really strong buffering capacity to soil.
The one called Petula, Miss Kim is the common varietal name. I have on occasion, and it's rare, seen that plant come in and not bloom, where it's just vegetative only.
Yeah.
It's very rare, but if it is that plant, I would say that it could be possible.
Okay, let's go over to Kathleen in Greenwich. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I wondered, I had a rhododendron that was a deep pink color that I really liked, but it was in a place where it was really not getting enough sun. Trees grew up, and it got too dark. And it looked like it was not going to survive. So what I did was I took some of the – that's still in the ground. I took a few of the branches and laid them down on the ground and rooted them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now I had forgotten to dig them up. But, well, maybe I hadn't totally forgotten them. You know, I do a lot of stuff. I get busy. But at any rate, I haven't dug them up and replanted them yet. Do you think I still have time for them to adapt?
We think you should wait
before winter, or should I wait till spring?
Yeah, we think you should wait till spring only because it could, you know, it's a sensitive time for a small transplant like that for that particular plant.
If you'd done it in September, maybe, but it's getting late.
Yeah, it has to. It, you know, it really depends on what the season would do, and we're thinking it's going to get cold now. So, in which case, you would be better off waiting.
Yeah, can't hurt.
Okay.
All right, Kathleen. Thanks a lot for the call, and over to Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Hello, Jim. You're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, guys. I got a question about Juglans dieback. It doesn't affect my black walnut trees, but it does affect my butternuts terribly.
Yeah.
Can you enhance me?
Well, the disease that's affecting butternut is unfortunately a very bad fungal pathogen that's causing not only your butternuts to have problems, but it's actually threatening that plant across its native ranges. Huh. It's a really bad one. It's kind of like, I wouldn't say it's as bad as Dutch elm disease, because that one is even worse, or as bad as the chestnut blight.
That's been around a long. I can remember in the 60s having butternut disease, and they died.
Yeah, that's been around for a long time. It's not a new one.
It's not new.
Yeah. You know, I guess the key would be to try to keep your plants healthy, and that's sort of been the best method of, you know, prevention is sort of the best method. Just keep the, it seems to favor plants that are more stressed out. And I don't believe
there's any treatment for it, though. Right?
There's no great cure. It's kind of like Dutch elms. Yeah. I mean, you could do, there are injections. There's a lot of things being done with these plants, but not a really great.
Vascular collapse disease. It kind of clogs up the pipes, basically.
It does. It acts kind of like a Dutch elm disease in the sense that it's like what Bob said. It sort of clogs up the pipes or hardening of the arteries for people caused by a fungus.
Yeah.
On plants. And so that one, you want to just try to keep your plants healthy. And you're right, it doesn't actually affect your black walnuts. But there is another disease called a thousand canker disease that is also a major problem. And it's not here in New York yet. And when I saw your call, that's kind of what I thought you were going to be talking about. But that one is in Pennsylvania. And as far as I know, that's about as close as it is to us right now. And that's something to keep an eye on.
What's it called?
It's called thousand canker disease. It's another fungus disease. And this one actually attacks black walnuts. And it's heading for New York. Not to cause a panic. But it is making its way this direction.
Everybody stay calm. Jim, thanks a lot for the call, and quickly over to Rex in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. You're on.
Good afternoon. I just have a question about, I'm doing some indoor growing, and I'm trying to figure out how to test soil for pH.
Oh, that's easy.
I see all these
little
meters
kit
that you can buy and all these different things.
I like the kits rather than the meters, don't you?
Yeah, I do find the kit is more accurate than the meter.
Why?
The meter gives you more of a range, and the kit, I think, can get you more tailored towards an actual number.
The thing you have to be careful of with the kits that you buy in the garden centers is that they're not a wide-range kit. They'll usually go up to about 7, but they won't go higher than 7. You can get a Cornell kit that'll take you higher than 7. And we see a lot of pHs in the 7-8
range. So you would want
If it says it's 7, it could be higher. Yep.
This is for interior plants? And so you're using.
So I live in Massachusetts these days.
Yeah, we got you.
I understand.
Yes, we understand.
Yeah. So you're using a potting soil that should.
No pun intended.
Right, a potting
That's
soil.
Right.
No. That is that you know that has a pH already that is predetermined.
Yeah,
it's and probably
so,
okay.
Yeah, so if you're using a fairly fresh amount of that soil when you're potting, you probably are fine for the short run, and then it depends on how long it stays in there. But repotting those plants, if they get bigger, once they get bigger, may just simply solve all your issues.
Also, the fertilizers you're using are going to affect the pH because most of those mixes are neutral. But fertilizer is not necessarily always. So if you really want a super accurate number, send the soil sample off to like Cornell University.
Yeah, UMass soil lab.
Yep, and I know in New York it's like under $20 to get this done, and it'll be more accurate than any kit you'll ever get.
All right, we'll take a break here. 800-348-2551, the number. Fred, Bob, Greg here, and it's The Gardening Show. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Curtis Lumber, featuring Great American Kitchen, Wellborn Cabinets, and Cambria Quartz Countertops. 100% American-made products by American workers. Sold locally by Curtis Lumber. CurtisLumber.com. From Wellspring, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to end relationship and sexual abuse in our community. WellspringCares.org. And from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, The Gardening Show. Last one for 2017, and we have the dream team here, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. And before we get back to the phone, couple of quick emails. We have so many phone calls. I don't know if I can get to all the emails here, but this one is from Don, who says, good day. Can you explain what's going on with the huge abundance of white pine cones this year? I've never seen so many. I've raked up thousands of cones, and the trees are still loaded with them. That's from Don.
The drought last year seems to have really set up a lot of fruiting that formed late last year because of that, and now those cones are ripening this year. We see it in spruce.
It's a funny thing that
when
plants are stressed in an evolutionary sense, they try to go to seed to preserve the species.
Yeah.
So you'll often see better flowering and fruit after a stressful period.
We have a Copper Beech. My neighbor actually has a Copper Beech next door to our garden center, and every morning when I come in, the gate I open is right next to that Copper Beech, and I have never seen so many beech nuts on the ground. Yeah. I've been there doing this for 35 years, opening this gate.
And this year.
What's
the reason?
So they set a lot of flower, and pollinate a lot of fruits. The same reason some years we have a lot of acorns.
Acorns this year. They're falling like rain.
The acorns have sort of been cycling for a few years, and so some trees don't have acorns, even though the drought may have affected them because they had so many going into the drought.
Yeah, we've got a number of the arboretum that are like a little bit less this year with acorns, but more beech nuts.
But beech nuts and all the conifers are just tremendous.
And usually results in more mice and more ticks.
Oh, yes. Great.
There's more seeds to eat.
And probably no cones for a couple of years, especially on those white pine.
This one's from Karen. We have several Norway spruces on our property, which were planted in 1955. They're towering now, very, very tall, almost 60 years old. Is there a lifespan for the Norway spruce? And do their roots run deep?
Well, you know, there's a lifespan for virtually everything, right? But the lifespan for a Norway spruce is a lot more than what, she has in the ground. So 50, 60 years, no, they can go 150 years on a spruce like that. It depends on the condition, too. The root answer is that almost all trees fall into this, and even shrubs. The general rule is the deeper roots are only underneath the main part of the trunk. And even the trees like oaks that have real big tap roots, those roots are really just anchoring that big plant from falling over.
Yeah.
The feeder roots, which is the vast majority of the entire root system, stretches out 2 to 3 times the canopy spread. So you look at that drip line and you know that you're definitely double that, unless you've got a road or a driveway or something that's stopping it. It's 2 times the canopy spread
and
at a minimum.
Usually only, 18 inches or 24 inches deep?
Yeah,
right?
Probably about 18 inches on average. So they're not very deep. They're actually coexisting with turf grass roots. They're all intermingled with all the other trees around it, all coexisting and fighting for survival in a lot of ways as well, especially with turf grass. But Bob probably doesn't want to hear a turf grass.
Back to the phones we shall go. And Bonnie in Sharon, Connecticut. Bonnie, you're on.
Okay, mute it.
Hi, you're on.
Hi. Sorry. Okay. As my husband asked to put the mute on the phone.
It's always good to mute your husband.
well, no, it's the radio. Anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm a little bit astonished that when that lady called in earlier in the show and she was asking about her burning bushes and, you know, getting them in order, that you failed to mention that it's an invasive species.
That's right.
Well, ends up in our woodlands.
It does. Yep.
And it's not the only one, but it's like one of the most prolific of things that are putting stress on our native plants, along with like Rosa floribunda and what is it, Japanese honeysuckle and bittersweet.
In Massachusetts, all of those plants you mentioned, plus a few more, are illegal to sell. And Ward's has not offered a burning bush in about 17 or 18 years now. In Connecticut,
nobody's recommending that she, tear her burning bush out and put in something that's non-invasive?
She certainly could, absolutely.
She was looking
to... when she called, so that's why I was kind of shocked.
Okay, so are you guys going to apologize to Bonnie for not mentioning it?
Sorry about that, Bonnie.
Sorry, Bonnie.
I think it's really important to educate people because they don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call.
Good point. Appreciate
it very much. And let's go over to Christine in Phoenicia. Christine, you're on.
Hi. Last March, someone gave me a tiny little pot of a shamrock plant, they called it. And it was on St. Patrick's Day. And as it grew, I kept transplanting it, and now it's in a big planter with pointy leaf azaleas, and it's grew all through the summer, and it's so abundant. But I never got any flowers, and it looks like it's three-leaf clover, but never got flowers. What is it?
Yeah, it's Oxalis is the genus, is what all of the, quote, clovers that you see, whether they're green-leafed or purple-leafed, are all in that Oxalis group genus. And some of them bloom quite nicely. Some of them are grown for their flowers as well as their foliage. And then some are just grown for those leaves. I'm sure that plant could bloom in some way, but you may need to increase the light levels. It may be, it's probably seasonal, so it's probably more of a spring bloom.
Will it winter over outside?
No, you would. I'm sorry. I thought you had it in a. You have it in a container.
It's in the container outside.
Yeah. So you'll need to bring that in for the winter. We've had.
Oh, it would survive through the winter.
Yes.
Inside.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Christine. We appreciate the call. We go to Kathy in Kerhonkson. Kathy, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about rhododendrons. We moved into a house last year, and we have some rhododendrons planted up against the house. And they're getting taller than the back deck, and it's near where we have the barbecue. So I want to prune them, but I'm afraid to kill them because they're kind of straggly in the way they're growing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you want to prune them after they bloom. That's the key time for pruning rhododendrons, azaleas, either of those plants. So wait till they bloom. And as soon as you do it,
I heard 25% off. Is that what it is?
A general rule is for most plants is you don't want to remove more than a quarter of the foliage or 25% at any one pruning session. So that is correct. And because they're straggly, you might also want to consider maybe a little bit of fertilizer too. They probably benefit, especially if they're older and you've never fertilized them. That could help induce a little more growth. And
you can trim rhodies back more than that, but it takes a long time for them to recover. Yeah. I cut some right to the ground 1 year, and it was 3 years before.
Yeah, you can do like a rejuvenation pruning, but I don't think that's where you want to go with these ones based on what you're talking about. But you can cut them pretty hard, and they will come back, and you can get a brand new shrub. And the timing is different on that. You don't prune them that hard after they bloom. You would actually prune them prior to growth, so when the buds begin to swell. But I don't think that's where we're going with yours. I think yours is 25-30% maximum removal of foliage at any one session and right after they bloom. Little fertilizer too.
Okay, and do you recommend them near the house? Because that's where I see most rhododendrons, up against people's homes.
Sure.
They do really well around people's homes, so especially if the pH is right.
And then just prune them every couple of years so that you're not waiting as long, and you should be able to keep them under control.
And the root system, are they damaging to the foundation?
No, not at all. Nope, they're really shallow roots and gentle in terms of root growth. Gentle.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go to James in East Greenbush. James, you're on.
Hello, how are you? Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about garlic, and what's the best way to plant it and acquire nice garlic size? And as I checked my pH in my soil, it was 6.5.
That's perfect pH.
Yeah. So planting large cloves gives you large bulbs. That's always something to keep in mind. Pointy side up, because you can plant them accidentally upside down, and they will actually grow and form a bulb, but it'll be a little twisted there. It's not as nice. Full sun, those cloves should be spaced, anywhere from 7-8 inches apart to 10 inches apart in the row, and maybe a foot or more between rows. Good, rich soil with lots of organic matter. I would recommend fertilizing in addition to that. You could do it now, and or you could wait until April and make that application. And then when you're done planting, some kind of mulching material just to kind of make sure the soil doesn't erode over the winter. So maybe once you're done planting, a little light application of straw or better yet, a light application of that compost I talked about, sort of acting like a mulch, maybe an inch at the most.
One more question. I had a good crop last year. And what I did was I used the Biotone.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That is good stuff.
Fertilizer.
Yep.
To when I planted the clove in the ground for last season.
Yep, sounds good.
And it came out pretty good, so I was wondering.
Yeah, if you're having success, don't change what you're doing.
Don't fix if it is not broke. That's an old
Hey, James,
thing.
Thanks a lot for the call, and we'll go over here to – oh, see, we had somebody who was on for a long time, and I think he finally gave up, and I was just going to him now. Apologies. But I know that Helen in Pittsfield has been holding for a while. Helen, you're on.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. I have a question about we have two hydrangea bushes that we bought probably – 4 or 5 years ago, and they bloomed 1 year. I live in Pittsfield, and then we put them in the ground, and they have never bloomed since.
Do you know what type
and
they are?
I didn't know. Pardon?
Do you know what type of hydrangea they were?
I really don't.
What color was the flowers when you had them that
pink.
1 year?
Pink, yeah.
They were pink.
Not purple or lavender, but clean pink.
Yeah. A clean pink.
Okay.
And this was not something you got for Easter. This was a shrub that you bought.
Right. This was a shrub. So 1 year I did prune them down, and they didn't bloom the next year. And then they're big now. They're probably feet wide, and they're tall.
Do you think there's any deer browse occurring in your yard? Do you think the deer are coming through in the winter and eating anything in your yard?
Well, I do have deer in my yard, right? I have about 2 acres, and we do have deer.
So right now, when you walk up to that azalea, and you will see this central...
Hydrangea, you mean?
Hydrangea.
Hydrangea.
Oh, I'm off.
Hydrangea.
So, never mind.
So it's weather-related on these macrophyllas. You know, sometimes you prune them and it works, sometimes you don't prune them and it works, but it has more to do with the weather. We're also finding that some of these newer types, like the endless summer types, bloom worse over time. The older they get, the less well they bloom. So there's becoming newer varieties of macrophyllas.
Okay.
So, you know, you may want to wrap them with some burlap and protect them and mulch them up well. But mine die to the ground every year. They die right to the ground. I cut them all the way down, and they don't bloom until September, until they get some real size to them.
Yeah. A lot of times the flower buds get damaged during the winter winds, and then the foliage buds don't because they're hardier, and you'll lose a lot of the blooms or all of the blooms, but they get really great really great foliage. If you want a lot of details about hydrangeas, you can go to hydrangeas.com. It's a free website, and
There's a lot of controversy.
And though I thought they were azaleas at first, now that I know they're hydrangeas, you can also do what we like to call winter mulch, which would be to take some soil or really compost in this case, and in the next couple of weeks when all the leaves are finally off, sort of bury the base of the plant, sort of gently shovel in this compost so that it's actually a mound at the base of the plant, covering the very crown of the plant. All the stems are still sticking up, and you're not going to do anything about them, but you've buried at least 7 or 8 or more inches of the base of the plant. That sort of brings the ground up around the plant. That's protecting that wood. Hopefully that will get that wood to winter, and that's where the new growth with hopefully some spring buds will be.
Helen,
you have to take that mulch out after you're done in the springtime, just to clarify.
Okay, quickly, let's go over to Marcia in West Glenville. Marcia, you're on.
Hi. I have a lot of dahlias that I grew for the first time, and I grew them in pots. They were the giant type, and I had some seed ones that were supposed to be giant, but they were and they weren't. What do I do with those tubers? Do I pick them out now and dry them out, or do I wait until the plant dies and then pick them out of the ground? And then what do I do with them once I have them out of the ground? I have tried pulling up. They're huge.
Well, you want a little spading fork or a shovel to sort of gently dig them up so that you're not snapping anything. You try not to have too many wounds on the tubers themselves, and you can do it now. You don't have to wait until the frost knocks them. I mean, dahlias are still in bloom because the weather has been pretty mild. Or you can wait until the frost does finally do in the dahlias. It's up to you. But either way, in the next couple of weeks, you'll be digging them up, gently getting rid of the soil, maybe washing them off a little bit with the garden hose, letting them dry before you then. I like to wrap them in newspaper, each one in a piece of newspaper, Generally labeling them as you go, or at least labeling the group that you have, and put them in a cardboard box and put them in your basement if you have one.
A dry basement.
Cool, dark location, you know, relatively low humidity, which usually in the winter works out pretty well. And then you leave them there until at least the late part of April. You can put them in pots. You can plant them directly in the ground the middle of May, and they'll start all over again.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's just the information I needed.
Well, Marcia, thank you for calling. Fred Breglia, how do people find out about the old Landis Arboretum?
LandisArboretum.org.
All right, Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery?
Yes, WardsNursery.com.
And Bob Graves, Fadigan's?
FadigansNursery.com.
Great having you guys here in 2017. We look forward to the January edition of the program, and have a great holiday season, guys. Don't work too hard.
Yeah, you too.
You too.
I never
you
work too hard.
Rarely working. We all know what you
hardly
do.
Working. Right. support comes from Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionXLEyeCare.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated for over 50 years with indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, bird feeders and seeds, organic fertilizer and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar. Offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, binoculars, nature gifts, and garden decor, where people and nature come together, wildbirdjunction.com. And Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, the Middle East, and the U.S. since 1987, with a concert of strings, piano, and flute, October 29th, 3 p.m. at Skidmore Filene Hall, saratogachamberplayers.org. Thanks again to Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves for joining us today. Thank you for the calls, and I'm sorry we didn't get to more of them. You know, it's a popular program. We'll be back in January with a midwinter edition of The Gardening Show. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Deb Malik answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we discuss sheet cakes and pies. How can you lose? We'll find out tomorrow.